welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for November 12th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me is my buddy Jim Allen. What's happening, dude?
Well, technically, I'm not with you. I'm in Koenji, but we're connected by the magic of the internet, and I'm good. Yourself?
Well, technically, you're never with me because you never got my back.
I got your back. I got your back from miles away, man.
Well, I want to give a shout out to my sister. I just realized when I typed in that this is November 12th. November 12th is her birthday, so happy birthday, sis.
Is everyone in your family born in November?
Just about. Okay. The ones who just missed and the ones who are still to come, I think they're aiming for November. But anyway.
That's ironic. Everybody in my family dies in November. So.
Oh, great. Well, let's not kill the podcast. And this week we're going to have a discussion with former Nippon Ham Fighter Matt Winters. And we're going to talk about free agents and some trades and hit on a few other topics. So let's start clearing the bases.
All right. Well, at Sapporo Dome during the Japan series, one of the real pleasures was catching up with Matt Winters, as we do from time to time. Matt Winters was a five-year player for the Nippon Ham Fighters back in the 90s, and a great AAA player who had a very good career here. Now he is working as an international scout for the Fighters. He splits that duty with former San Francisco Giants pitcher Alan Hargesheimer, and they were both at the Japan series because the Fighters said, you know, you guys, we owe some of our success to your help, and we're a team. So they said, hop on a plane and get over here, and we'll take care of the bills. So
yeah, that's awesome. That is really great that they. I mean, we always hear, as if we go out to the field and we the talk about these guys who are the overseas or the people who are in charge of bringing over the imports. But we don't get to see him. We don't get to talk to him. We don't know what they're looking for. We don't know what kind of player, what kind of personality and all that stuff. So it's good to talk to these guys once in a while.
It is. And Matt, you know, it's funny. We've just kept bumping into each other over the years. We've never scheduled anything, but we must have talked five or six times over the last 10 or 12 years. So it's just amazing. And bump into him at Tokyo Dome, bump into him at the Fighters Camp in Nago, Okinawa Prefecture. It's always a pleasure. He's a funny guy. He's a real joy to talk to. And so thanks for that. And it was nice to meet Alan Hargesheimer, too, since he was a player with the Giants just when I was still living in the States. He was a young player, and I was confused for him once. We were both about the same age and the same size, and some lady in the team hotel thought I was him.
Well, we won't get into that story, but
nothing to get into. So
okay, that's good. That's good. But I don't know if that's what that says about him or what it says about you. Maybe this is a long time ago, I suppose, when you were in shape.
19 years old. So no, I was a shy young man and. Stayed a shy young man. Okay.
Good. Anyway, you and me both.
Okay. Anyway, so I caught up with Matt and at Sapporo Dome before Game 5 of the Japan Series, and this is what he had to say.
These guys, I said, you know, I wish I could have been in the Nippon Series, but you know, this is the next best thing to it. You know,
well, you gotta didn't have too much luck with. Micah had a heck of a year.
You know, Mike has done a good job. You know, I mean, he's got the right kind of attitude, and you know, I think you know he can play here for a while. You know, and that's one of the things that we kind of try to take pride in is getting the right guy with the right mentality to come over here. You know,
and they signed Sledgy, and it didn't work out because of his knee.
Well, and you know that was a safe sign because Sledgy was here before and helped contribute all that time and stuff, and it just. You know, it's a shame to see a guy's career kind of end on an injury, but...
Okay. That's the prognosis now?
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it's just for the season here. I'm sure Sledgy will probably end up playing somewhere if he's not back here with somebody.
But it's quite a testament to how this organization has grown in the last 10 years.
Well, you know, it's the front office. I mean, yeah. And it all starts with the ownership, too, because, you know, they're not making changes. They know that this system's been working for them, so why change it? And, you know, each year they kind of, you know, tweak it and make it a little bit better. And so, well, you can't ask for a better organization to work for.
Well, this is your seventh year. How did you get in with the back with the Fighters?
Well, you know, Toshi Shimada, right. Who, when I played over here, Toshi was my interpreter. Right. And then, you know, all of a sudden Toshi got a little power and stuff, and they were looking for a guy in the States to scout. And so he called me up and he said, man, do you want to, you know, scout in the States for us? And, right. And you know, I mean, I love Japanese baseball, and right. it was a perfect opportunity to stay in the game over here, plus stay in baseball over there. So, you know, it worked out good.
Okay. Now, one of our listeners on our podcast, and I'm going to throw a spoiler out there. He commented that this week was a... He commented that one of the things that he enjoyed so much about the World Series was that the Giants are kind of a major league version of Japanese baseball this year. And in some respects, I understand what he's talking about.
Yeah, you know, and the one thing about all that, too, is, you know, we're sitting there watching the games back home and seeing the Giants sweep, and then the Giants win the first two games here, you know, and they're kind of like the National League team, and we're the American League team, right. And we're like going, oh, no. don't, you know, let's not have history repeat itself. And
yeah, that was a little weird.
Thank goodness we won a couple games here.
Yeah, that was eerie for a little while there. You guys had swept in the Climax Series, and the Giants had their backs to the wall. And
yep. And it kind of seemed it was running on course there.
Right. When Hara came out here on Monday, he was telling some of the reporters asked him about that. He said, like, what does that have to do with us? It's got nothing to do with us. And fortunately, he was right.
Yeah. Fortunately for us. I mean, we're thinking the other way around.
Yeah. So tell me about, obviously the organization, what makes this organization so special, you think?
Well, you know, it starts with the people that are up top, you know, with Toshi and Yoshi and Yamada-san in there. And those three, I think, you know, they had a plan. They had a game plan way back when.
Right.
When Trey was over here and they executed it. And, you know, scouting-wise, we're getting younger players that, you know, that can play.
Tell
you know,
about it.
And I always thought to win over here, you know, it's nice to have the gaijin. But the gaijin should just be a help. They can't be the guys that you count on. And we have that kind of team out there offensively. You know, you can go out there. I mean, Cebu, when I was playing, you know, Cebu had nine guys. They didn't even have to put the Strata in the lineup, and they could beat you with Akiyama and Kiyohara and those guys. And that's kind of the same way we are now. And that way, you know, when a gaijin comes in, he doesn't have the pressure to take the team over. You know, he can sit there and contribute a little bit.
Or sit and listen to the 45-minute meetings before the Japan Series game.
You know, sit there and listen to a meeting and, you know, come out here and enjoy the atmosphere.
Yeah, it is a heck. The Fighters team is so young. I mean, all these young kids, Sugiya and the infielder, the left-handed infielder, is doublet at bat.
And, you know, and you got Yo coming into his own a little bit, you know, becoming a player that everybody thought he'd be when, you know, he first got drafted. And, you know, Nakata, same thing. And, you know, Itoi, you can't say enough about that guy in the outfield and the talent he has. And then, you know, it all starts with Inaba, though, man. I mean, that guy's,
amazing.
Has to be one of the most professional guys that I've ever seen, either here or in the States. You know, he's just a pro.
It's so ironic with him that his career was so much better after he couldn't sign a major league contract and he came back and signed with the Fighters.
Yeah.
He was a great player with the Swallows, but he was hurt so often.
And he's come into his own, and I'm loving the Inaba bounce or whatever they do up there.
Inaba jump.
Yeah, that's outstanding.
You see that. I put that on my Facebook page last night.
We went out to left field, and we were out there in the cheering section when they were doing it.
Something. This place rocks.
But, you know, he sets the tone, you know, and, you know, he works harder than anybody out there. And so now these young guys see this, and, you know, they see this guy that's got over 2,000 hits. You know, he'd be a Hall of Famer. And he's working like that. Well, you know, we better kick it up a notch.
Yeah. I mean, what you say about the organization and everything is so... It's so obvious when they can bring in a guy who's never managed, Kuriyama, who knows the game, but he's never managed, and, you know, they knew who they wanted. They had a very narrow group of candidates they wanted, and they've had three managers, and they've just been, you know, the success hasn't stopped.
It hasn't stopped, and it just continues, and, you know, you give a lot of credit to the coaching staff, too, you know, because... you know, it's and they keep things going on the same plane, and that stability. You know, there's stability in the front office. You know, year in, year out, it's the same people running it, and you know, making sure the program goes well. And you know, some clubs, you know, there's a change in the front office, and then somebody comes in with a different philosophy. Oh, we're going to do this, or we're going to change this. Well, you know, they found the formula that works here.
Yeah.
And so, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, I mean.
All right, well, thank you very much, and that'll work for our podcast.
All right, well, thank you very much, Matt. Again, always a pleasure, and I hope you're listening out there today.
What a great voice. I just have to say that right. I mean, it's unfair that a guy like that can play baseball, and he's got that success, and he's got that sheer enjoyment going for him. But to have a voice like that on top of it, he should be in radio.
I know. Well, we have to get, you know, we just have to get a hit squad and get him and Leon Lee. They're making us all look bad.
I'd switch careers with him, or I'd switch voices with him, but you can't have both. That's just unfair.
Oh, how true. How true. And what a pleasant guy. So what did you get from that?
Well, I mean, the first thing is that I wanted to talk about my memories of the fighters when I came to Japan, which is, you know, I came to Japan in 1990, right at the end of the baseball season. So I started watching in 91. And my memories of the fighters were, you know, obviously it's different. It was different back then from what it is now, where we have all these highlight shows on TV and the news covers the baseball so much better than it did before. But I used to watch some of the highlight shows at night, and I'd see these teams and I'd see these foreigners, but I hadn't heard of Matt Winters in the States, so I didn't think much of the Pacific League anyway. I was living in Nagoya. I was concentrating on the Central League, but I always saw him a lot. I saw a lot of highlights. This is a guy who he knocked in 428 runs over his career here. He hit 160 home runs. He was on the news a lot, but they didn't always show those interviews like they do now. It's just so different from what it was back then. So the thing that really caught me, caught my ear in the interview was when he talked about the foreign players being, you know, the main cog in the lineup, and that more or less they want to look for import players who can be a supplemental piece or a complementary piece. But I think those days have changed, and I think they've long since changed, because I don't think teams bring over guys like the Lee brothers, LeRon and Leon Lee, to help carry a team. I think more teams with their imports are looking for guys like the Micah Hoffpower, who maybe can produce at an average rate and bring some pop, just bring some power to the club. But, you know, you look at the signing of Bobby Scales, and he's not the kind of player who's going to carry the fighters. Obviously, they needed him in the middle of the season when Kensuke Tanaka got injured.
Right.
But he's not the carry type. And you look around, I mean, the Tony Blanco types are here, but we don't really, it seems like in the past 10 years, they've just gone, maybe even more than 10 years, they've gone with players who can contribute on a regular basis and bring a little pop, not so much a guy who's going to carry a team and be that cleanup hitter all the time. That was the thing that stood out the most for me.
Well, I think I understand what he's saying. I mean, first of all, one, you love to have that guy. I mean, there's no problem with having a guy who's Tony Blanco.
Definitely.
Or Tyrone Woods. Or Tuffy Rhodes. I mean, that's what you call, that's a big, big plus.
You never throw guys like that back.
Right, exactly. You don't say, oh, sorry, you're too good. You contribute too much. What you want, one, is you want guys with the proper attitude. You want guys who can produce and who have the proper attitude and the proper mindset and skill set that allows them to adapt to Japanese baseball without demanding a lot of attention. Okay, I think that's part of the issue. Now, the other thing is, from an organizational standpoint, what he's talking about is the team is built around Japanese players. We're not looking for a savior, is the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
We got plenty of talent here. And the other thing is, If it's here, you have a lot more control over it, and it could be a lot cheaper. Although, actually, to be honest, being Japanese baseball and being part of Japanese culture, you know, that upfront cost comes with a backside cost. You know, you have to keep giving them pay raises. You can never fire them until they're pretty much ready for, you know, a walker.
Right.
You just can't get rid of them. And you have a lot of teams that struggle with players on the roster that they don't really want, but they can't get rid of because they're fan favorites. And 7 years ago,
you're talking about Japanese players.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you can't get rid of these guys who are just, you know, barely, who are, you know, they might be, you know, first basemen who hit like, you know, good middle infielders.
Yeah.
And if they're foreigners, those guys are gone in a second. So the attitude, so the thing, what you want, I think, according to Matt, is, okay, if you can get Tuffy Rhodes, and if you can get Matt Winters, and if you can get Tyrone Woods, that's great. But if you can't, then you get Edgar Gonzalez, and you get Micah Hoffpower, and you get Esteban Germán.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get guys who are going to fit into what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I don't really think centerpiece guys are that easy to find.
They aren't. I'm saying if you can get them, great. See, and the fighters' whole thing is, the fighters' attitude is, we can develop a first-rate team made of, we can make a core of Japanese players that are so good that, and the fighters have trouble, to be honest. The fighters have a lot of players who can't get playing time because the Japanese guys are too good.
Yeah.
And they're not, this is not a team that goes out and outspends everybody like the Giants. This is not a team that's blocking its young players' advancement by signing aging free agents.
Yeah. Now, I did notice something, too, that, you know, other than Michael Nakamura, maybe in the last 5-6 years, they haven't really had a high-profile foreign impact player, like major impact player. I think Termell Sledge was really good for them.
Yep.
Brian Wolf has been steady for them. Bobby Keppel has been good. They've all, and let's hope Bobby can come back and he and Wolf can improve their production next year. But they haven't been high impact guys. They've been, just like you said, guys who fit in.
Well, Ryan Glynn became that for 1 year. He had a really good year. But you're right, and the fighters really haven't. The fighters haven't had the big. Of course, they had when they got Segi first. He was a big impact player. He was a monster.
Fernando Seguinol, yeah.
Fernando Seguinol, and congratulations, Segi, if you're listening, on becoming a U.S. citizen.
Oh, congratulations.
That is certainly the case, but I think those guys are hard to find, and sometimes you don't really know them. They're gonna be that player. I think everybody hopes the guy who fits in is gonna be, you know, have a Matt Mertens season. It's gonna have a Craig Brazell that you rescue from the independent league, and he's gonna hit 35 home runs for you.
Yeah.
But, those guys are hit and miss, and the big name guys don't tend to be like that. I mean, Major league veterans have been, with a few exceptions, really bad investments. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I talked to Tyrone Woods before, he talked about the kind of swing a guy has. If he has a flat swing, if he has not necessarily a hole in a swing, but a big swing. And then Rick Short, who used to play with the Octane Eagles, talked about guys who can hit with two strikes. He said that was a big thing for him. So obviously he went for the mental side. And then there's the personality to try to assimilate to the style of the game that's over here. Because no matter how good you are, what kind of talents you bring, you've got to get over some of the hang-ups or some of the baggage that you bring over from the States. And so there's so many adjustments that even, I mean, obviously Matt Winter's been doing this for a while, and it's so hard to figure out what guys are going to fit in and what guys are.
Oh yeah, that's a crapshoot. And the other thing is that you have to have a network. If you're in the States, you have to have a really good network because you're not allowed to go and talk to guys. You're not allowed, you know, if you're a fighter scout, you just can't walk up to a player who's under contract with the Toronto Blue Jays and say, and start talking to him. It doesn't work that way. So you have to talk to Pete. You have to talk to his agent, you have to talk to his coaches, and of course all they do is tell you what a great player the guy is. So it's really hard. You need the network of people you can trust, and so that's a big thing. And one of the things that I got from the our discussion essentially was how fighters here, we've talked about this for at some length this past 12 months about what are the fighters going to do without Yu Darvish? Well, you know, they're going to still be the fighters, and they're just going to give some more chances. You know, this is the Michael Westbay theme, which I firmly endorse, which is Japanese baseball losing stars means the ability to develop more stars, because you're not giving the innings to somebody, you know, you're giving the innings to people who weren't going to get them otherwise.
Develop or force feed the public a handkerchief Prince star.
That's another story. Every organization has a blind side, and the fighter general manager has carte blanche to pick who he wants, despite all the numbers and the scouts' information. If he has a hunch, he plays a hunch. And to be honest, it's worked out really well. But now and then you get Yuki Saito. So it wasn't like he was the only one who thought Saito could be better than he looked in his last 2 years at Waseda. But anyway, so Matt talked about his point was continuity. The fighters succeed by having a sticking with success. Well, I talked to Chimasa Shimada, the head of baseball operations for the fighters, a few weeks ago, and I asked essentially the same question. And of course, he and Matt said Toshimasa Shimada and the owner, Mr. Okoso, are the reason the fighters are successful, and Yamada, the general manager, are one of the reasons the fighters are successful. And Shimada said that one of the things that makes them successful is communication. The fighters are they're a little rare in the sense that responsibilities within the organization are fairly clearly defined.
Fairly clearly.
Yeah, well, compared to most Japanese teams, which look like they're like landmine. They're like minefields. You know, you can walk through and never find anybody who's responsible for something, or you can, get smacked by two people trying to blow you up at the same time.
Right.
They can be very ill-defined. They can have people. They can have areas where nobody's responsible, because essentially two people are responsible and neither knows what the other person is doing.
Right. I've seen that.
And have areas where they have nobody assigned to a job, or people who are ill-suited to the job assigned to a job, or people are told, don't worry about this job, it's not important. So there's a lot of that. And he said the communication and the expectations are discussed. You know, people know it. And this goes to another thing, which is so Matt said, continuity. Toshi said communication. And the third I'm going to put down is what Trey Hillman always talked about. Matt and also Toshi and I mentioned this, which is accountability. Now, one of the big things that Trey Hillman harped on when he first came to the fighters was not only communication, which he valued extremely, but was accountability, which is, if this is your job, how did you get it done? Did you do a good job or did you do a bad job? If there's a problem, who's responsible for it and how can we fix it?
Right. And I think all those elements add up to the fighters having probably, and this is just a guess because I haven't dealt with a lot of front office people from all 12 teams, but from the outside, it looks like the best front office in Japan.
I think they do. And the other guy that Matt mentioned four people after the owner, Mr. Okoso. He mentioned Toshimasa Shimada, his informal interpreter, who is now the head of baseball operations.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned the general manager, Mr. Yamada, and he mentioned Yoshi. And I'll have a shout-out to Hiroshi Yoshimura, who I back in the 90s when he was doing PR. He was in charge of a bunch of different things for the Pacific League. He's a former Nikon Sports baseball player who was working at the Pacific League, one of my first readers of my guide, and a tremendous help. And he went to work, he left the Pacific League in the end of 1998 and went to work for the Detroit Tigers for a year or two, came back to Japan for 1 year with the Hanshin Tigers where he was underemployed, and the fighters basically said, Toshimasa Shimada said to the Tigers, you know, we think we'd like to hire Yoshimura to do this job, and his Tigers boss said, yeah, you know, he'd be really good at that. Essentially that he's wasted with us.
Yeah, that's he fits into that position much better than he fits in with us here. Take him.
They said basically, yeah, we can't use him for his whole talents because we're the Hanshin Tigers and we're going to do certain things a certain way. And it doesn't matter how smart you are or clever you are. It ain't going to change. So those, characters came in there and they got they decided, okay, we're going to have a general manager in Shigeru Takada and we're going to have a manager who has clear roles. And what they have is accountability and responsibility. And so they can take a new manager and he can be successful and they can take, you know, second time they've had, they've won three Pacific League, they've won four.
Four, yeah.
They've been to the Japan Series four times in 2006, 2007, 2009, mm-hmm. 2012, and two times were with managers who were in their first or second year. Trey was in his fourth year. So it doesn't. You know, and then they've lose players. In 2006, they lost the Pacific League MVP, Michiro Ogasawara, as a free agent, and they won in 2007. This year they lost Yu Darvish and they won. So the lesson is, it's not always about the big players you're trying to sell to the fans. It's about, you know, putting a team, it's being organized and putting a team on the field and having, you know, having the people to do the job. And it's just a shout out to the fighters for what a great job.
Yeah, they obviously have been doing a great job. You can see that because during the interview, Matt kept saying we, that they are a team. They are a team on and off the field, and you could tell that. And it wasn't just because he was rooting for the team or just because he played for the team. I mean, he felt part of the decision making. It seems like he felt like he had a hand in it, and he does.
Well, I don't know about how much decision making he has, but certainly there is communication. I mean, I would venture to say he's not in a vacuum. He's not just saying, you know, we can get this guy. Nobody listens. I get the feeling that, you know, he is listened to. I'm not certain. I would think that's probably more of the case. You know, there is a communication. So.
All right. Well, thanks for doing that interview. It sounded good. Thanks.
It's a pleasure to talk to Matt, and I'll be in touch with you, buddy.
All right. So moving along, we're going to talk about some free agents, I guess, domestic and international. Let's start with Kensuke Tanaka of the Fighters. Now, he's coming off of this terrible arm injury, this broken elbow.
He had a ruptured ligament.
Oh, that's right. The broken elbow was Yoshimi. Yeah, okay. A ruptured ligament in his arm. Yeah, it was. I keep remembering it, and it just looks so god awful painful. But he's going to go to the States, and I'm trying to figure out what kind of player he might project to be. And I have him somewhere in between Tadahito Iguchi and a Muninori Kawasaki. Somewhere in between there.
Yeah.
I don't know closer to what, though.
Actually, the player I see him being in the majors is Akinori Iwamura.
Yeah, I don't see that. I'm not sure that he'll get a chance to play every day. I want to see how he responds to the way that the American pitchers pound the strike zone. I think he can hit. He can handle fastballs.
He can hit. That's the problem. He's going to hit. In fact, I think he's one of these guys who actually might do better in the States. You know, he's one of these guys who might do better than he might make the transition really well.
Like Shinjo. Shinjo was such an average hitter here, and then he had a really good season with the Mets where he hit close to 300 or hit 300 or something. It's kind of ridiculous, but he hit a lot of pitches that were hittable.
Sure. He was being, you have to deal with more frequent nasty breaking stuff in Japan, and because the umpires are going to give those guys those balls out of the strikes, they're going to call those, a lot of those pitches strikes when they're nothing near the strike zone. And if you're an undisciplined hitter, however, and this does not apply to Tanaka, if you're an undisciplined hitter, that's great because you can go there and you have less trouble. Tanaka, on the other hand, is a more disciplined hitter, but he has he can hit the fastball. He doesn't have the strike zone coverage of a guy like Norichi Gaoki, which was why I liked him to succeed. But he's a smart, one would think he's a smart player, he's been hurt twice. He got the slide breaking his ankle, 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, and then he hurt his elbow making a, silly play.
At first base, yeah. Covering for on a bunt play,
but I think he's a very solid player. Will he get? It's hard to see him getting a starting job, but who knows? I mean, the reason I mentioned Iwamura is because Iwamura got a job with a team that was on a tight budget and was looking for people to fit specific roles. They were looking for people under the radar, and going to be under the radar. I don't think anybody's really looking at him as a big free agent, but if there is a team who's trying to moneyball their way to the top, I think he's a heck of a pickup because he's a known quality to some degree, and he's definitely it. So, and he can field. I think you leave him at second base and I think you leave him at second base and just let him do what he does in Japan, and I think if that's a hole for you and you don't have a lot of money to spend on a big free agent, you can get Kensuke Tanaka, and I think everyone's going to love to have him.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think I'm not sure he's going to be an everyday player out of spring, but I think he can earn, sort of like Sō Taguchi, he can find his niche playing, here and there. And I think he'll do, the more he plays, the better he's going to get.
Yeah.
Because he'll be able to make adjustments.
So Taguchi is a good analogy for him. The other thing, he has had two injuries in the last year, and he did have some other issues in the past, but they never kept him out of games. Now that was also the case with Iwamura. So anyway, and that he developed, going to the majors, wiped his body out. In terms, he started getting injury prone, which he wasn't particularly, he was never injury prone in Japan. So this is something I think what we have to sort of take a look at is what's happening. And the same thing with Kazuo Matsui.
Yeah, well, I think having every Monday off the way they do in Japan, at least your body knows, most of the time during the long, long season when you're going to have time to rest and heal up. And you won't get that opportunity playing 18 consecutive days in the States, and guys wear out. They just wear down.
Right. So I think this is we're always so concerned about the pitchers and pitch counts and their pitch history. But, the players, the injury history to Japanese, fielders, and I want to say the infielders, has just been pretty atrocious. So, we did talk about it. Yoka, which is an obvious case because he broke his leg, but Iguchi was pretty durable. I'll give him that. He was pretty durable, and he was a big, tough guy, but Iwamura was too, and he's a scrappy guy, but his back just his back and knees gave out on him, and it really ruined him.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's move along to Hiroyuki Nakajima. Now, he was obviously posted last year, and for some reason, the New York Yankees were the bidding, won the bid, and they couldn't work out a deal, so he came back and played in Japan. Now he's going to the States as a free agent. I've seen Diamondbacks. I think I saw another team, but I don't remember. I prefer him going to a place where he doesn't have to worry about, he can kind of get buried and doesn't have to be doesn't have the microscope on him. A place like San Diego, although that's not a very, that park is a terrible hitter's park.
Yeah.
But I'd hate to see him buried in Toronto or Cleveland or something like that. But the Dodgers would be an interesting choice. Again, not a very hitting friendly ballpark. But I still see him at third base, like I said last year, and I think he can focus on being a line drive hitter who shoots gaps and drives in runs, and I think he can have success as well. I think he's going to be another guy, like you said, who if a team is looking for a guy who is not too expensive and not too high profile, this guy fits the profile.
Well, he does, and basically he just wants a chance to play every day in the majors. Now, he's not averse to ending up as a utility infield, you know, he's the fifth best player on the infield, but he is adverse to being told he's going to be a utility infielder. Of course, in retrospect, I do think he, you know, would have been good for him with the Yankees this year in that role. In any case, that's what he wants, and you know, and it's his life. So you know, go for what you want is my answer. I don't, you know, how I think about that. So. Is he a good player? I think he can be a good player. The one thing he does really well is drive the opposite field. He's got a great swing that to take pitches to the gap in right center. Most of his home runs used to be to right center before they changed the ball here. In fact, when he hit 20 some odd home runs, he hit two to left field. So he's built. Guy's built to play Major League Baseball, I really think, in that respect. He gives himself a big strike zone sometimes, but he's a smart player. He's a very capable player defensively. I would have loved to see him play in the majors about eight years ago, when he had this so much raw talent and he was sort of like cruising a bit in Japan. I'd see him, he became a casual sort of infielder. That period lasted for a couple of years, and I think his desire to go to the major leagues really revitalized his career.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't really see him playing short. I see him at third. I don't think he's going to be playing too much first base, perhaps some second. I don't know. It depends on what team, you know, what team gets him.
Again, depends on who needs him. Could he hit as a major league third baseman? I think yes. Could he play second? I hate to see somebody's played his whole career at second base. Now at shortstop, be thrown into second if it's anyway. So I think he can do a job. He's a little trickier because he's not a second baseman and he's not a third baseman, but he can play. He can adjust. He's not the sharpest tool in the shed, but we'll see. So you want to have him on your team in some capacity, and give him a shot to compete is what I'm saying, and see what he can do.
All right, we'll see how that goes. Now, Kyuji Fujikawa, the Hanshin reliever, has stepped up and said he wants to go to the States. I don't see him being a closer in the States. I don't think he's got that, but maybe a seventh inning guy.
Who knows? It might work out because he's a different kind of player, but the problem with him is how forkball, because his fastball really isn't any good anymore. So, you know, if his fastball is good enough that, you know, it keeps people from just teeing off, looking for the fork, you know, making every pitch about forkball. Yeah. His velocity has been decreasing steadily for the last 2 years. He has been hurt a bit. So there's a question. You don't expect him to get healthier in the major leagues for any reason. So, you know, I see him in that Uehara. I see him as Uehara number two.
I don't even think that good. I'm surprised. In fact, I thought this was, to be very honest, to be candid, I thought this whole thing was just contract related and he wanted more money and that he wasn't going to go to the States. He was just trying to bargain for more money and use it as leverage.
I don't think so, because he spends every winter in the States. I think he's really just enamored of that whole thing. So I think he wants to do it. But, so in that case, I think the fact that he spends so much of his all in the States every year is going to make the transition a little, So,
you know, off seasons in the States, there's no pressure, there's no games, you don't have to work every day. This is a different situation you're stepping into.
Of course it's different. Different. But I'm saying that as opposed to somebody like Nishioka, who's, you know, been to Hawaii, you know, spending a month, you know, he spends probably 5 or 6 weeks in California every year for the last 4 or 5 years, is he knows what it means to be in the United States.
Well, at 32, just like you said, I don't see anything getting better than this year. And he was iffy at times this year here in Japan, so I'm not really expecting very much.
It's hurt this year. He was hurt.
He's been hurt. That's part of the problem. I mean, since he turned 30, he's been injury prone.
Well, this year is an exception, but how much of an exception, I don't know. Okay. Do I think he can be a better? Yes. Can he be much better? No. Again, the other thing going for Japanese pitchers in America is they have an advantage in that they're different from major league pitchers. You know, they have a different, a little different. Now, here's the trick. They have a different way of pitching, which is hard to adjust to if you're a major league hitter. It's the same thing happened. Guys come over here. You know, they're looking for fastballs and fastball counts because that's how they play baseball. And you don't get that. Now, here's the problem is Fujikawa doesn't really have a breaking ball. So, you know, it's basically splitter fastball. So, okay.
Good luck.
Okay, so domestic free agents who have declared, and they are Keiichi Hirano, who said Saturday that he just wants to see what other teams think of him and would easily consider going back to the Hanshin Tigers.
Yeah, and that's in part, I think, because Tsuyoshi Nishioka has been talking with the Hanshin Tigers, and he's quite incidentally an infielder. Now, I think he would play short with the Tigers. I'm sorry?
He'd be a shortstop. Of course, the question is, what do you do if, and, okay, now here's the thing. Today is, as we speak, it's Sunday morning, and there's about 24 hours left for free agents to declare in Japan, and the Tigers shortstop, Takashi
Toritani,
has not declared. So, if he stays with the team, what are you going to do with Nishioka? And I'll tell you, Toritani is a much better player than Nishioka. Toritani is a much better player than Nishioka. You're not going to take Toritani's job away from him and give it to Nishioka because he was a major, you know, for any reason. I would make Nishioka a second baseman if that was the case. If Hirano, he is an upgrade over Hirano. He's not an upgrade over Toritani.
All right, well, I would say he's a shortstop, and Toritani has spent some time at second base, too. I think they're interchangeable, but I think if you're going to get a guy who's not 30 yet, and you're looking at Toritani, who's a little bit older, I think you go with the younger guy at short and push the other guy over to second and go from there.
Mess it up. I'll tell you why, because Toritani's he's the best player on the team. And you don't push him out of a job. It's sort of a different leader situation in the sense that if you've got Alex Rodriguez, he's the best shortstop on the team without a doubt, but make him the third base because of the team. Like Derek Jeter's a shortstop stretch of the imagination, but you got a team. And if you got Toritani, who is really the heart of the team, you don't be messing around with use a pejorative. Don't mess around with a player like Nishioka, who's a head case.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, he's a very talented player who plays like, he can play like nobody, nobody could be a better shortstop than Nishioka. But he isn't. You know, that's just the way he is. And anyway, so would I push anybody, a quality player like Toritani out of a job to give Nishioka one? No. Not until Toritani was 37 years old and he's got a few years. Okay. Next, Takeshi Hidaka, longtime Oryx Buffaloes catcher, has declared for domestic free agency. He is apparently going to the Hanshin Tigers. The Hanshin Tigers spent the entire winter trying to get every catcher under the age of 40 to think about coming to Koshien.
Darn it! I'm too old!
Indeed. Reportedly tried to trade for Moto Hiroshima, which would have been great. They tried to get Tanishige to declare. I hope Tanishige would declare free agency and come to. And well, he's over 40, but
I was going to say he's older than I am.
He is. He's a youngster because he's younger than me. Every player is a youngster is younger than me, so they're all young. Even Kimikasa Kudo is young.
Oh gosh, yeah. Well, Tanishige is a little bit younger than I am, but all right.
Hayato, the last free agent we have is Hayato Terahara, who's from Oryx, who has said he is going to, made it known through channels that he is headed back to his first team, the SoftBank Hawks, although when he played for them, they were the Daiei Hawks.
Yeah. And he went from there to Yokohama and then to Oryx, so.
And not much with Yokohama, so. And not much with Daiei either, so.
All right, so we'll keep an eye out on the other free agents. Now, there was a trade this past week as well. The Oryx, Buffaloes, and Yomiuri Giants got together, and I think the key piece in that trade is obviously Shun Tono, who was the opening day starter for the Giants in 2011 and had one appearance this past season for the Giants.
He had a good game line, but he didn't pitch well. And it was a spot starter. It was an audition to see if he might fill in because the Giants had a lot of pitching. People were out of rhythm and out of sync and having some little dings and dangs or whatever it is. And they wanted to see if Tono might be able to step up and take over the fifth spot, that Dickie Gonzalez role in the rotation. And, he missed a lot of pitches and gave up some hard outs and walked a few guys, and it looked, I think he gave up two runs in five innings, but it wasn't a very pretty two runs in five innings, and they sent him back to the farm for good.
Yeah, I think Hara has long despised Tono, and I remember a number of instances, even in 2011, when Hara wouldn't bother sending the pitching coach out to the mound. He'd go out there himself and berate Tono. And so it was no surprise that when they acquired a lot of pitching last year that, in the offseason after 2011, that Tono didn't see much time on the field this year. But he can be a serviceable starter for the Buffaloes, I think. I don't know what expectations they're going to have for him, but I think he makes their rotation, and if he still stays healthy, he can win 8 to 10 games for them. And it would be a boost for that team because they were inconsistent on the mound last year.
Well, they were inconsistent for a lot of reasons. Now, the media has blamed Okada. For the inconsistency by making starters into relievers.
But that's what he does.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it was such a failure with of course, it was a success with Hanshin because he had two starters who he put into the bullpen, and nobody even remembers that these guys started, Tomoyuki Kubota and Kyuji Fujikawa. So he tries to do it. That's what you said. That's what Okada does. Well, first of all, he wasn't the first. Oryx has been doing this for years because Momoto Kishida was a starter, and he became a pretty good reliever. They've had a couple of guys who went from starters to relievers under Terry Collins and the manager in between them, Daito Oishi, did the same.
Mm-hmm.
Hirano, because Hirano was coming off arthroscopic surgery on his, I don't remember whether it was his shoulder or his elbow. He had a bone chip.
I think it was his elbow.
And, which would be if it's a bone chip. Okay, so he had no velocity and he couldn't pitch a lot, so he came back but the media was saying they made Hirano reliever. like it was, you know, they're just looking for excuses why Oryx plays badly, which is, you know, it's sort of like, I don't know, looking, it's sort of like a witch hunt in the Haunted Mansion. You know, it's like,
you're going to find a few here and there.
Well, you know, if you're looking for, like scary things, oh yeah, you know, let's pick a target, and it'll come the easiest target. So, Oryx, I talked to the pitching coach, one of their pitching coaches, Nobuyuki Hoshino, about a month and a half ago, and we talked about the starting rotation, and they have so many candidates for the starting rotation, you'd think they'd be trying to get rid of guys, you know, and just say, this is actually the process of their autumn camp, is who can we get out of the mix to decide who's going to be in the mix? Because it's just, it's like, it's like a can of Campbell's vegetable soup. You know, you just dump this thing in there and try to sort out, try to find the good stuff in there, find, you know, find what's going to work. It's just a mishmash.
It's like a can of Campbell's alphabet soup, and there's no A's in it. There's a bunch of B's and C's.
Okay, who could you rattle off? Well, they traded Ryota Kotsky, who's the other part of that trade. There were two no names in the trade, and who the players who will never be named later.
Well, they've got Kaneko, I think, has been their ace. They've got Kisanuki, the former Giant. They've got Yuki Nishi, who threw his no-hitter on the eighth on the last day of the season, but that was just his eighth win, so he's no star, and he had been MIA, basically, most of the season. They've got Komatsu. They've got some guys. I think even Nakayama pitched well for them last year. But, again, they're all, like, B-level starters, not A-level.
I wouldn't even put as a B-level starter. He was a guy who had who went from being out of the picture to in the picture because he's got a very good curveball, and in a year when people weren't used to seeing what curveball slider pitchers could do with a new ball, he had a great year. So you know, he and Nishiguchi were probably the biggest benefactors of the new ball in 2011. Tomiya Nishiguchi of the Lions. And basically when people made the adjustments, you know, got used to recognizing what the ball was doing, you know, he took a step backwards. And when he takes a step backwards, you know, that's a big step. he's back in Italy, which is where he belongs. But yes, they have Alessandro Maestri, who's quite useful. So, but they've got basically seven or eight guys that they have to decide who's going to be these starters, and they need to really sort things out and plan it. Now, they said they would do that, but sorting things out and planning things is not what Oryx does. I think on opening day they'll have a 10-man rotation,
and only five of them will be useful. We'll see how that works out.
So this week we have the last two games of the season, essentially. We have Japan will be playing Cuba Friday in Fukuoka and Sunday in Sapporo. And I asked manager Koji Yamamoto on Tuesday, what's he going to do to teach the Japanese players, you know, to help Japanese players adjust to international competition where they won't have endless video and data analysis of every player so they can try to predict what pitches are coming in, what counts in what situations. And he said, really good thing. Well, we're going to focus on our swings and making sure we can hit the fastball.
Now, you're talking about the WBC, and there are a couple games this week.
Yes, but these are not WBC games, but they are playing a team from Cuba.
Right, and these are warm-up games.
Yeah, which is packed. The Cuban All-Stars, and they lost. I watched the game last night a little bit in Taiwan. They were losing to the Taiwan national team 2-0. He said we're going to try to, you know, work on hitting fastballs and make sure we've got the basics in order, which is, to me, beauty. It's a beautiful thing to say. It's exactly what they've got to do. And then he said, and of course, on top of that, we're going to analyze the Cuban players. We're going to analyze the opposition. You know, you have to say that if you're in Japan. You can't say we're not going to analyze them.
Yeah, they don't play see the ball, hit the ball.
No, they play think about the ball and then try to hit it.
Well, guess where it's going?
It's going right past you, baby.
All right. Well, yeah, the WBC team was, Yamamoto's selections were released this week, and we'll talk about it more next week because we're going to run out of time this week. But no Darvish, no Miyamoto, no a lot of guys. So we'll see how that works out.
She wasn't going to play in this game anyway. It's basically a bunch of young guys. There's a couple of veterans. Abe, Shinosuke Abe is the name, the WBC captain already. It's a bunch of young guys, and he's probably of the 29 guys who were named, I'm guessing maybe half of them or 12 of them will make the eventual roster for the WBC. So this is a tryout, essentially.
Okay. So we'll see how it works out for him. All right, let's go to fielding questions. Okay, so we got a comment, and I don't remember where it came from, so I apologize. I remember it was either via email or on the Facebook page, and it said, Game 3 of the Japan Series, Brian Wolf of the Nippon Ham Fighters started against DJ Holton of the Giants. And someone asked, when was the last time two foreign pitchers started against each other in the Japan Series? So I took to the internet, and the only thing I could find via Google search was 1964 Japan Series between the Nankai Hawks and the Hanshin Tigers. The Hawks won the game 4-0 behind Joe Stanka's two-hit, no-walk shutout. And then Gene Baki allowed 3 earned runs on 5 hits and a walk over 4 innings to take the loss. Now, that's the only one I could find. Stanka ended up being named the MVP of the series. And the only thing that I remember about that, or I know offhand about that year, because that's the year I was born, was that that was the year of the Summer Olympics in Tokyo. So that was coming off the Summer Olympics. They played this series, and I can't remember. I remember seeing something on the site that said that attendance was kind of low because of the Olympics that year had drained the economy.
And it was weird because of the way they scheduled it. They tried to schedule it weirdly because of the Olympics, and it was an Osaka series essentially between the Hanshin Tigers and the Nankai Hawks, and everything was weird about it. So anyway, but a great and famous matchup. So
okay, and then we had another question from Ted, who lives in the Bay Area, and he said, will you be covering the Asia series? And the answer to that is a big fat not really.
The Asia series, which will be over in a few hours, and the Lamigo Monkeys will take on the Yomiuri Giants this afternoon in Busan, looking for Taiwan's first championship in the Asia series, or the Giants will either have Taiwan's first championship or the Giants' first championship.
Yep. And Ted says, I watched the Giants against Perth yesterday, which was someday during the week, last week, and it was very interesting. Also, does the Asia series matter very much to MPB teams? And the answer to that is a big fat, not really.
The answer is no, and the reason the answer is no is because there just isn't really any interest in it. The crowds are very low. The only crowds, I would be surprised if today's final gets 3,000 people. Had it been the final being between the Yomiuri Giants and the
Samsung
Lions, there would have been a pretty good crowd. If it had been between the Lotte Giants and anybody, it would have been a good crowd because it's the Lotte Giants' home stadium. But the answer is no. Probably. And Toshimaster Shimada said, look, why don't we get rid of the Asia series because it's just nobody cares about it. I mean, I think it's a wonderful idea, but the time has not quite yet come. It needs to be marketed better. They did have a Korean – the reason it was in Korea this year is because they had a sponsor for it. So hopefully it will get – they had a good sponsor for it in Japan, but they need – it needs more of a lot of things going on for it. So – It's analogous to Japan's desire to have a series between the Japan champion and the World Series champion. You know, it would be a big deal in Japan, but major league owners, it'll happen. As my cousin from Detroit, Michigan said, you know, when are we going to have a real World Series between, you know, the MLB champ and the Japan champ? And the answer is it'll happen at the instant that major league owners think it will be profitable.
Excellent.
The the second they think they can make money out of it, it'll happen.
Excellent answer. Excellent answer. Now, Ted's last question, is the off-season in Japan very busy with trades and free agency? And the answer to that is a big fat yes. That's all they do. In fact, the free agency, just when a player, for example, is going to visit with a team, it's big news. If they sit down and talk for rounds of talks, that's big news every time they go in. Then also salary negotiations occur in the off season. So they players go in and they say, this is what we did, what I did. This is my performance and production the past season, and this is what I'd like to be paid for the upcoming season. And we talk about that all the time. Trades are not actually all that common.
Because teams market players as their selling point. I mean, not in the way they do in the States, but, you know, like, he's our guy. You know, he's the local hero. They market players as local heroes. And when you spend all your time building up a player, you know, and saying he's the reason you should be coming to the game because he's one of us. So they don't trade him. And, because it's hard, it will be hard for the other team to market him. There are big trades, but they're pretty few and far between.
Yeah, they're not all that common. So it's mostly free agency and salary discussions and, you know, player movements, who's coming from the States, who's going to the States, that kind of thing. So that's what we'll be talking about during the off season here, and we'll talk about more WBC, and we'll find out where these free agents are going for next week. Please send us your questions, and thank you for the questions and comments. Please send your questions or comments to ykyujohn@gmail.com and send them on an MP3 so we can play it on the show. You can hit us up on the Facebook page as well. Leave us a comment there, and next time I'll promise to write it down or cut and paste it somewhere where I remember to put it on the show.
Thank you for listening, and we will be talking at you and hopefully with you next week.
All right, enjoy your off season.